Hey, everyone. Thank you for listening to I Think Not, the podcast that recaps all of your favorite true crime TV shows.
Even frogging, the source of all of our nightmares.
You can listen to all new crazy stories every week on Amazon Music.
That's right, where you can find our show, I Think Not, and all of your favorite podcasts. Thank you, Amazon Music, for hosting this nonsense.
How was Mexico?
It was great. It was lovely. I thought about you every day, every minute, on every hour, and I love you.
Yeah, I don't like the way you're looking at me.
Well, we've been friends for so long, and we built a foundation on trust and honesty. So would you like to take that statement again?
I trust and am honest when I say that I love you, and I'm not scared of you.
Better.
Hello, Yellen Marsh.
Hi, Joey, and hello, DBs, and welcome to I Think Not, the podcast where Joey Taranto and I, Ellen Marsh, old best friends, sit and try and lie to each other about the things we know that are true.
It's going well.
I kid, we are here. We are the podcast that recaps your favorite true crime TV shows. And every month we bring you a new show, and this month is no different. If you caught our last series, Death by Fame, we sure did love that one, but it is time for a new series. Joey, tell them what we're covering.
We are covering Killer Siblings.
Killer Siblings.
Terrifying.
It is absolutely terrifying. Do you love your siblings?
I mean, what are you talking about? Could you imagine if I was like, no.
Well,
I hate them.
You like some better than others.
Yes.
Would you kill for your siblings?
No.
Okay, well, not these people on this TV show. That is what we are doing. You can find this TV show on Hulu, Pluto, which is free, as well as Peacock and a bunch of other things. Well, we can't wait to dive in now. If you are looking for our other series, we have hundreds of episodes on our general feed. We also have hundreds of episodes in our back catalog on our Patreon. Some of our favorite shows that we have ever come across, you will find there on our Patreon. We have ad-free levels. We have levels that bring you merch. We have levels that bring you Swamp Talk, which is our talk show that we do once a month. You can even sit backstage with us. If you're looking for some bonus content and a little more of us, please head over to our Patreon at patreon.com/ithinknot. I promise you'll have a good time.
I agree, and you'll hear us be absolute buffoons.
And if you don't have a good time, that's on you. Because it's a good time. There are so many things. Some of our favorite shows we covered on the Patreon that have not seen the general feed yet, like You Love I Almost Got Away With It.
Love.
Pink Collar Crimes.
Love.
Speaking of I Almost Got Away With It, that is the subject for our upcoming tour. Joey, tell them where they can come and see us live.
Well, you can come and see us in D.C. because we've already played it.
We've already been there by the time you heard it. I wore sequins and you looked adorable.
Thank you. You can also see us in Seattle, Chicago, Los Angeles, Tampa, and St. Louis.
For now, that's what we have on the agenda. You all, you know we are self-deprecating human beings, but I'm going to brag on us for a second.
Do it.
Our live shows are so much fun.
They are.
They are silly. They are stupid. The case never deals with anything too dark. It is an episode of I Almost Got Away With It. It is totally okay to laugh. We sing. We dance. We cry. We do tricks. We're needy as fuck.
We are. And then we'll kiss you at the end of the night.
Yeah, we'll kiss you. We will even kiss your drag-alongs. If you bring a drag-along, we'll kiss them.
Yeah, I hope they have a bald head.
They're usually men, but sometimes they're women. But bring them along. Tickets are available on our website. Just click the See Us Live link on ithinknotpod.com. Please come and see us. You know what? I'm going to give you a money-back guarantee. If you don't laugh the whole time, I'm going to give you your money back. You hear me?
Sorry. Ellen's going to give you her share of the proceeds.
I'm going to give you my share of the proceeds. It's fine if you want to take out of Lola's college fund. It's no big deal.
Hey, my kid.
We hope to see you there. Please, please come and please laugh. Shall we get to the episode, my love?
Yes.
Killer Siblings, Season 3, Episode 2, Kimballs.
We received a 911 call for a residential structure fire.
As they went through the house, we found a body.
This was actually a textbook case for arson.
Whoever did this was trying to destroy the body.
She was my go-to.
I looked up to her like a big sister, a mentor.
And this whole thing is a mystery. He got a $200,000 life insurance policy without her permission.
The main suspect had an airtight alibi.
There must be someone else involved.
He couldn't say no to his older brother. He'd rather die.
Well, we are in Pleasant Garden, North Carolina. Isn't Pleasant Garden your Tinder username? It used to be Wreck-It Ralph, right? Or was it Golden Corral because it's an all-you-can-eat buffet?
Oh, look at you. Did you workshop those down at the Comedy Cellar?
I'll be here all night.
Thank you. Imagine him just sitting in the corner of our studio, just sitting with a cigarette hanging out of his mouth like Lenny fucking Bruce over here. What are you, Lenny fucking Bruce?
Yeah.
What, are you going to do a fucking stand-up act all around my vagina? Go ahead.
Yeah, I will. Don't worry.
All right, what's the next one? Give me another one.
That's it. So Pleasant Garden is just outside of Greensboro, North Carolina, and it's a small town where... Everyone knows everyone.
Are you okay, honey?
I'm fine.
What's wrong?
I don't want everyone to know me.
Do you want anyone to know you?
Yeah. I mean, yes. Yes. But like a town where everyone's like, hey, Joey. Oh, hi, Joey. How are you? I saw a strange car parked in front of your house the other night. Who was it? What were you doing? How long were they there? Just kidding. I watched until they left. I know that they were there at 3 a.m. And when they left, their hair looked a little messy. Barbara, mind your business. Eat your peanut. I don't want you in my life. I didn't ask for this. Don't worry about what I was doing. You know what I was doing at 3 a.m. And you know why that man looked like the back end of a Muscovy duck.
Baby, are you okay?
So Sheriff B.J. Barnes tells us...
They have their ball teams, their churches, they have a volunteer fire department. They have everything that you would want in a rural community, and they're a very, very friendly place.
I love Southern accents.
I love Southern accents.
There are certain words that just hit so hard in the South, and rural is one of them.
Is it rural?
No, it's rural.
Or it's rural. Well, as they were explaining Pleasant Garden and how everybody knows each other, just know whenever we hear that definition of a town, my brain automatically goes, Joey would hate this town. But just as they're saying that, we see a view of the Baptist church. Did you see this picture of the Baptist church?
I saw, like, you know, I'm not like you. You look for every minute detail in a picture.
I don't look. It jumps out at me.
I'm a man, so I'm not that
observant. They all have those neon arrows. Well, I wasn't raised Baptist. I was raised Catholic. But they have a Baptist church. And you know those sign with those, you know, stick-on letter things, you know,
yes,
that they can change?
Yeah.
So you didn't see what the sign said?
What did it say?
It said... Our Father, which art in heaven.
Isn't it who art?
Correct. It's Our Father,
who art in heaven.
Because...
Howard be thy name.
It's... Right. That is very confusing. Howard be thy name. I thought his name was Jesus. But I don't know what the church maintenance guy was doing, if he was just fucking with people or he was stoned. But he was like, outside, he's like, wait a second. How does that prayer go? Our Father, which art? Who art? Whose art? I'll just write which.
Hell no.
No, sir. Who art in heaven? Like, I don't know. I don't know who did it, but they thought I wasn't going to notice, but they noticed. I mean, they all might know each other in Pleasant Garden, but they do not know their prayers.
Listen, if you're going to pray, you got to say it right. Otherwise, God doesn't hear it.
Wait, do you not have the Our Father in your religion?
No, that's Catholicism.
No,
mostly.
It's not, because they're Baptists.
Oh, okay. Well, no, we did not have that.
You don't know the Our Father?
I know it, but we didn't really see. I mean, it's in the Bible, isn't it?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Well,
look at us, two heathens.
All I know is it's not which art in heaven. Someone needs to fire that maintenance man.
No, I don't know that prayer, but I do know. Our God is an awesome God, he reigns. That's what I know.
You just had some poor trauma-induced child call their therapist for an extra appointment just from singing that line. Can you apologize to the people?
I'm so sorry, because if I have religious trauma, you do too.
Joey, guess who's back?
Who?
IQ bars. Okay, if you follow me on Instagram, you know that I love the IQ bars. I was eating about 2 or 3 a day. Maybe it was a problem. It's fine. But I also went on a journey to try all of their IQ Joe, which is their jitter-free instant coffee. It has 200 milligrams of natural caffeine, brain-boosting magnesium, and productivity-enhancing lion's mane. I tried them all for you, and you all, the clear winner for me was vanilla spice, but I did try them all and they are amazing. I like them cold, but you can have them hot or cold or however you want. So start each day right with IQ Bars Brain and Body Boosting Bars, Hydration Mix, and Mushroom Coffees. Their ultimate sampler pack includes all three. So get 7 IQ Bar flavors, 4 IQ Mix flavors, and 4 IQ Joe flavors. And today, our listeners get an exclusive offer of 20% off plus plus free shipping. Just text THINK to 64,000.
I personally love IQ bars. I keep them in my backpack for when I travel, or especially before the gym and post gym. It's entirely free from gluten, dairy, soy, GMOs, and artificial sweeteners. And if you're on the go and you're like, oh man, I forgot to eat, which happens to us a lot, I pop out an IQ bar, I get the protein I need, plus it tastes delicious.
And you all, I've tried those all too. I have tried every single flavor, from the chocolate sea salt to the peanut butter chip. I personally love the wild blueberry, but I also love the chocolatey ones. I swear, if you see me on the street anywhere and you are hungry, ask me for an IQ bar, because I'm gonna have them in my bag.
So refuel smarter with IQ Bar's Ultimate Sampler Pack. That's 7 IQ bars, 4 IQ Mix Sticks, and 4 IQ Joe Sticks.
And now our special podcast listeners get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus get free shipping.
To get your 20% off, just text THINK to 64,000.
Get your discount. Text THINK to 64,000.
That's THINK to 64,000.
Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details. You all, they're delicious.
Delicious! We have a crime scene tech named Stormy Shoemate here. What a name.
In my mind, her name is French, and it's Stormy Shoemate. I just made that up. She's not French, but it looks like Stormy Shoemate.
Or maybe in Italian, you'd be like, Stormy Shoemate.
Nisle.
So she tells us that you would never think anything bad could happen here. And I was like, you obviously don't listen to true crime, honey.
True crime.
What'd I say?
True crime. But you know that True Crime was Tupac's cousin, and they actually came up the ranks together in the music industry. Mm-hmm. And then Tupac blew up, and True Crime was like, what about me? And he was like, every man for himself, cuz. And they're like, he's like, we're cousins. And he's like, no, we just sort of say that. I actually don't think we're related. So True Crime, actually, he did not do well at all.
No,
I mean, he
just went back to Mark.
Yeah. He's like, all right.
Well, that brings us to October 9th, 1995.
Great year for music. I think we've covered this, because do you remember what the number one song is in 1995?
I think my guess was Gangsta's Paradise.
Yes, I think we've covered it, but I'm going to bring you to number 20 on the Billboard charts, because it is a one-hit wonder, but it always slaps.
It's not Chumbawamba, is it?
No. All right, I'll give you a hint.
Okay. You gotta be bad, you gotta be bold, you gotta be wiser.
How did Desiree not take off? Her voice was smooth like butter. It was. Her voice was so silky.
She did have one more hit, but it wasn't as big as You Gotta Be. Do you know what it is?
No.
Think.
No, that was Aretha Franklin.
No, that's not what I'm saying. Think of Baz Luhrmann's biggest movie from the 90s.
Moulin Rouge?
Think of Baz Luhrmann's second biggest movie from the 90s.
I don't know.
It is from Romeo and Juliet, and it is, 'cause I'm kissing you.
You're so right.
It's beautiful. Those were her only two ones.
But then Waterfalls and Creep. But let's take it to true crime. What was the biggest thing to happen in true crime in 1995?
Well, it's not OJ, because that was 94. Am I wrong?
Well, he was found not guilty in 1995.
Yeah, but the murder happened in 94.
Right, but he was found not guilty.
So was I right then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Look at you. And also, one of my favorite movies is from 1995. Can I just play a clip?
Mm-hmm. So, Virgil, I gather you like hitting ladies.
Some ladies need to get hit.
Uh-huh. Then, conversely, some men need to be hit back.
Oh, God. Virgil's gonna hurt me. That's so bad.
What is this?
Caroline, there's something you should know about Vida, mommy. Well,
Vida works out. Vida works out.
A lot.
Oh, that movie would never fly right now, but man, did I love that movie. And I'm sorry, Patrick Swayze was divine.
Oh, see, I disagree. I think he was the weak link. You know who really stole the show?
John Leguizamo.
John Leguizamo was incredible. Yeah. And also, Wesley Snipes as Noxzema was incredible.
But I just thought that...
Adam's apple. Women do not have Adam's apple.
Adam's apple.
All right, y'all.
Hi, we're here.
Yeah, sorry. This is a dark story, so we're, you know...
We like to soften the blow on either end. Joey takes the top, I take the bottom. What?
Yep, switch it up.
At 8:46 p.m. on October 9th, 1995, the Pleasant Garden Fire Department received a 911 call for a residential structure fire
The caller states that he is the homeowner's brother, and he's concerned that his sister, 28-year-old Patricia Kimball, may be trapped in the house.
Todd Ross, her brother, saw smoke coming from a house. And, you know, the word smoking can mean two different things, two very different things. Because if you're smoking, that's a good thing. If
okay.
It's smoking, not a bad thing. I am a victim of a house fire. Okay?
I know you are.
I am allowed to make jokes.
Okay.
So we see the reenactment. We see this 1995 phone calling the fire department. Gather around the campfire, children. Back in the 1900s. We had these phones that you could not take with you. Every household had one, every office, and even some public spaces had them.
Mm-hmm.
It was a device attached to the wall. The handsets were attached by long coiled wires in varying lengths, depended on how rich your family was. Now, here comes the fun part, children. When the phone would ring, you did not know who was calling. Oh, children, the excitement was palpable. Was it your crush or was it your neighbor calling to tell you to turn down the music? The possibilities were endless. What a time to be alive. The landline.
Oh, God. There's a whole TikTok series about kids trying to figure out how to use a rotary phone, and they're like, how do you text?
Kids are so stupid.
The firefighters get the call about this house fire.
And one of the firefighters says,
anytime you hear someone may be trapped inside the home, it automatically raises the level of intensity. We were immediately en route to the scene.
I actually didn't know we needed to get more intense than a house fire.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know there was like an above level of intensity.
Yeah.
I would think a house fire is like pretty intense on its own.
I would agree with that statement.
Out of all the disastrous things that can happen to a home, I would think fire would be at a 10.
I would agree with that as well.
Yeah.
The only thing worse is water.
Yeah, that is true. So they say they were immediately en route once they heard there was the possibility of someone being in the house. So just know if you have a house fire, they will be en route. But if there's someone maybe in it, they will be immediately en route.
Okay. I mean, you know, that makes a...
I'm just saying a fire is pretty scary on its own.
I agree.
There could be pets. There could be fish. There could be landlines. There could be... You just never know. It's just scary as shit. Fire is scary.
Fire is very scary. Well, they enter the house through a side door in the garage, and that leads into the kitchen. And there was so much smoke, they couldn't see anything. Well, firefighter Bradley says,
the smoke was so black, you couldn't see in front of your hand.
I'm trying to lighten this up because it's very sad, but I love in the South when we add a syllable to just any word, your hand.
Hand.
So they couldn't see anything, but what they felt was very intense heat.
Right. And the nice thing about, since this is on oxygen, we do have a great relationship with oxygen. So they sent us the editor's cut of this scene, and it goes something like this. So the voice that you will hear is actually the producer.
Can you explain what a fire is like?
It was very hot.
Uh-huh. Can you say anything else?
Dark.
Okay, great. Thanks. I think that's a wrap, guys.
Yeah.
Fire is hot.
Fire is hot and can be dark. Well, outside, Patricia's husband, Ted, arrives on the scene, very distraught, and he's yelling, my wife is still in there. I mean, I can't even fucking imagine.
Oh my gosh. He is panicking. And now they know for sure they are looking for a victim.
So inside, the firefighters are trying to find their way through all this billowing smoke in search of a victim. They're crawling on their hands and knees. They can't see anything. And as they advance down the hallway, the floor gives and two firemen find themselves in a hole. That hole is a crawl space beneath the house.
I know it sounds like we're making a left turn into Frogger territory. We are not.
No.
I wish we were, because this is dark. So they take a flashlight to see through the smoke, and someone says, does that look like a hand? And it was. It was a very, extremely badly burnt hand. And so they radioed that they think they found the victim.
And once they get the smoke under control, they begin their investigation. The remains were removed and placed on a white sheet, and it's gruesome, to say the least. They couldn't even determine the gender of this victim. So they transport the body to the medical examiner's office to conduct an autopsy.
You all, listen, this is very sad. This is very dark. We are trying to bring some levity. So when they explained that this poor victim was burned because it was exposed to extreme heat, I was like, can you not tell us that is what burns something, is being exposed to extreme heat? I do not claim to be a scientist or anything of that sort, but I do know that the physical properties of fire involves extreme heat.
Yeah, the producer was like, explain it to us like we're llamas and we don't speak English.
They're like, got it.
Yeah.
It just, it's a lot. It reminds me a little bit of this.
10 people died in the Bronx last night due to a fire that killed 10 people in the Bronx last night during a fire.
Fire officials say all 10 people died due to the fire, which was too hot for their bodies.
That's what it reminds me of.
Got it.
Joey, tell him who's back.
Ooh, it's BetterHelp. Y'all, I am not joking when I say therapy has saved my life. It helped me to face my past, manage my present, and figure out my future. And that's why I'm so glad BetterHelp is the sponsor of this podcast, y'all.
There are a lot of ways to take care of yourself. Eating right, getting exercise. But what about that beautiful brain of yours? I have benefited from therapy for years. I have learned some coping skills. I'm still learning how to set some boundaries. But I know that I am on a journey to find the best version of myself. And the thing about BetterHelp is it works with my very chaotic schedule. It is convenient, flexible, and it is all done online.
All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. They make it very easy, y'all.
So learn how to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp.
Visit BetterHelp.com/I think not today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/I think not. And take care of that beautiful brain of yours, because we love it.
Call your therapist, call him today.
At that point, we also were informed that the homeowner, 25-year-old Ted Campbell, is at the scene.
Ted told us he was concerned that the victim in that house may be his wife.
Her car was in the driveway. No one could get in touch with her. She was supposed to be at a Bible study that night at her church.
Well, that church needed to go over a couple of those prayers, so they clearly don't know them.
Whoever are in heaven. And it's at this point that the family assumes the victim is, in fact, Patricia, and they are beside themselves. How could they not be?
Right, but there's no corroborating evidence, but we see this crime scene footage. You all, this fire decimated the inside of the home. Patricia's car was there. They are waiting for the news. Of course, hoping for the best, right? Yeah.
And the investigators are also sort of suspecting that it's the victim is Patricia as well. Now, as they're investigating the home, they had to put a ladder over that hole in the hallway so they could get access to the bedrooms, because all three bedrooms were at the end of that hallway. And those bedrooms had very little fire damage, but the primary bedroom was, and I'm sorry, Mom, it was ransacked.
How can you not?
I know.
She gave us that gift. We have to use it whenever possible. Drawers were emptied and tossed. The mattresses were turned over. Everything was kind of thrown all over the place. So upon first glance, it appeared to be a burglary. And also the back door showed signs of forest entry. That's what my notes say.
Forest entry?
Forest entry.
Isn't that your other Tinder username?
Forced entry. So the investigators, the fire marshal, everyone is kind of looking at each other thinking, well, this changes everything.
Yeah, we are now dealing with a suspicious death investigation. So 4 hours after the victim was found in the fire, it's 1 a.m. and the investigation is almost complete. And they noticed a lot of weird things in the home. The majority of the fire damage was in the hallway where that hole was. And they determined that the fire actually burned down, not from the crawl space up.
It's really cool. We actually see a computerized reenactment of how they think the fire essentially blazed, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And there was a very strong odor of gasoline surrounding that hole in the hallway.
But more than that, they were able to deduce that because the fire burned down, as you said, and it kind of like curved, which meant that there wasn't enough heat to sustain the fire to keep going. I mean, truly, not to bring this back to me, but when my mom's house fire went through, I mean, the whole place, the blaze just kept going because it was an authentic, real fire. It just burned hot. And we learned that it didn't burn hot, or else it would have burned through the other bedrooms. It sort of burned and then it smoldered.
Yeah.
Very suspicious.
Yeah. How did your house fire start?
It was the wildfires in California. Yeah. I mean, it burned the whole mountain. It burned, I mean, hundreds of homes.
It's very tragic.
Those wildfires, you can't keep them under control. And when I went home, I left Kinky Boots. Like, I went and flew, and I thought I would, like, see my structure of my house. And we would, it was ash.
Wow.
It burned everything to the ground.
That is devastating.
Yeah. That's how hot those California fires got. I mean, like, they did. They just blazed and it just whipped out houses everywhere.
Wow.
It was devastating.
It looked as though whoever did this was trying to destroy the body.
This was actually a textbook case for arson.
Now investigators are on high alert because what it looks like is arson was used to try to cover up a burglary, or the robbery was staged and the fire was an attempt to cover up a murder. Here's the thing. Burglars are not usually setting fire to a home. Their goal is to get as many valuables as possible and get the fuck out of there without getting caught.
Exactly. Thank you, wet bandits. So why on earth would you burn the place down? If this poor victim was there and happened to be in the home, that's one thing. Now it looked like they were covering up a homicide.
Yeah. So now we hit 14 hours after the fire, and it is determined that the victim was, in fact, Patricia Kimball. She had also been shot in the back of the head and then doused in gasoline. And the time of death was 4 p.m., 4.5 hours before that 911 call had been made by Ted's brother.
So now we hear from Special Agent Jerry Webster. He's the guy who made that really fascinating computer model of the fire. And he was able to ascertain just from that the fire burned less than a minute and a half. So it'll burn really fast, but it's like with gasoline. Once it runs out of the gasoline or whatever accelerant, there's nothing left to burn. So it would just smolder. So if the fire was started at 4 o'clock, it was still smoldering in the state that it had from a minute and a half past. Meaning,
yeah,
like it wasn't burning, it was just sitting there like a campfire, essentially.
Yeah. So now the investigators go to the local church where Patricia's family was to break the news that the victim was indeed their beloved Patricia, but also to tell them that she had been murdered. And that's when we meet Patricia's best friend, Linda Thompson, and Christy Newbold. These poor women recount getting the news and how gut-wrenching it was.
Well, it hit like a ton of bricks. I dropped to my knees and I wailed. I'd never cried like that before in my life. It was gut-wrenching.
I don't know that there are words to describe what I felt inside at that time. Heartbreak, confusion, anger.
I mean, getting news like that, I would not wish that on my worst enemy.
Well, you're getting this news of your friend passing, which is awful, and accidents happen, doesn't make them any less tragic. But then to find out that it was a murder, and everyone is saying Patricia was the loveliest woman, and we learn a little bit about her. She had grown up in Pleasant Garden her whole life. She was a Sunday school teacher. She was strong and smart and independent.
Can I tell you something?
Uh-huh.
I taught Sunday school at my church.
Baby, no you didn't.
I did, but I didn't teach them about the Bible. I literally gave them an education in Disney because all I did was show Disney movies. And you better believe that all of those kids, by the time they reached 12, knew every word to supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
That is so sweet, but weren't they there to learn about the Bible? Didn't their parents know when they couldn't quote the scripture of John?
You know what that was?
What?
Not my problem.
How long did you work there, honey?
Work there? My dad was the pastor. And they were like, Joey will teach Sunday school. I was like, joke's on you. We're watching Alice in Wonderland, this trippy movie from the 50s where everyone's on acid.
Here, kids, have this nice little fruit gummy. Hey, Dad, what's going on? No, I feel great. I love Joey and I love you. I'm just thirsty.
Jesus. Literally. And also we find out that Patricia met her husband Ted at church and she was smitten with him.
And they seem like the perfect couple. We see their wedding pictures. You know what I loved about her wedding pictures?
What?
I loved her big veil.
Beautiful.
It was a big veil. It was like a crown. It was like it was like something Princess Diana would wear. It was a big crown, lots of lace, lots of feathers. I loved it.
Listen, yeah, people can say what they want about the 80s and the 90s, but the, you know what the weddings were?
What?
Ornate.
Yeah. Opulent.
They were very beautiful.
They were so intricate.
Listen, lace and candles and waterfall flowers?
Waterfall flowers. You know what I want to bring back? I want to bring back opulence.
Yeah.
What happened to opulence?
Yeah, I know. You can't get married at Versailles, so you get married at the First Holy Olive Second Baptist Design Church of God and Christ down there on 3rd and Ron in Pleasant Garden, and it's beautiful, and you cover everything in pink.
You cover everything in pink and waterfall flowers. If you don't have waterfall flowers, I'm not even coming.
Who cares if that church looks like it's been hosed down by Pepto-Bismol?
Doesn't matter. Blush and bashful. I fucking love it.
We talked to Patricia Kimball's family and friends. They can't tell us anybody who would want to hurt her. And this whole thing is a mystery.
We were just all in shock. We lost a very close friend. Her parents just lost their daughter. Ted had just lost his wife. He had just lost his house. He was just kind of walking around aimlessly, didn't know what to do. You know, who could have done this? Why would they have done this?
Nobody can make heads or tails of it. It is a massive amount of loss and confusion.
And the manner in which all of this took place is tragic, but it is horrendous. It's so much to process in real time. And that's when we get some backstory on husband Ted.
He was born in 1969, and he was also born in Pleasant Garden. He was born to his dad, Rodney, and mom, Edna. Edna was 15 when she was married. Ronnie was 17. Not going to pull up that thread right now.
15. Jesus, Lord, you know what I was doing at 15? I was still masturbating in the shower while singing to the soundtrack of Pocahontas so that no one know that I was masturbating in there. It's, you know, no one thinks that you're masturbating if you're like, quay, natura. I cannot imagine being married at 15.
Married at 15. Also, I just want a camera on Janet when she hears that story and she's like, I knew it. He listened to that album far too many times.
Hey. No one was on to me.
Well, Ted was born a year after they were married, and then little Ronnie was born shortly after. Ronnie Sr. worked in textiles, and Edna was a stay-at-home mom. And they did not have a lot of money. That is actually going to be important later.
Yeah, they struggled quite a bit. And in the 1970s, their father, Ronnie Sr., decided to become a pastor and moved to Lynchburg, Virginia, so that Ronnie Sr. could attend Liberty University and study with, wait for it, Jerry Falwell, that piece of shit.
What do you know about Jerry Falwell?
Jerry Falwell was involved in a lot of lawsuits.
He
tried to sue people. I think he was in a lawsuit with Penthouse, also with the gays. He really fucked with the gays.
Yeah. Well, he always used to say that he would, quote, train young champions for Christ in every walk of life, unless you are a woman, black, homosexual, not from this country, or anybody other than just a white guy.
Here's a little twist for you, Jerry Falwell. Jesus was not white. He was not white.
Also, I'm pretty sure Jesus loved everyone. I think that was his, like, slogan.
I think that was his whole bit.
I think the flags, Jesus's flags, wouldn't say make America great again. It was just, I love you no matter what.
Yeah.
I feel like, I'm not sure. But you know he created that whole party he created, the Moral Majority.
Mm.
Remember that whole,
oh,
it was
God,
like a,
right.
It was like an organization, it was like a, anyway, he loved to hate people.
So Ronnie Sr. graduates from Bible College and the family moves back to Pleasant Garden. And Ronnie Sr. becomes the pastor of the Monette Road Baptist Church.
Growing up, Ted and Ronnie were just your average kids, but as brothers, they were as different as night and day. Ted was just super charming and confident. He did well in school. Ronnie, on the other hand, was awkward. He struggled all through school. Ronnie just could not be his own man. He did whatever Ted told him to do.
Have you seen, I've ever shown you pictures of my two older brothers.
Mm-hmm.
we all have like their similarities in our faces, but my two older brothers look like they are the cousins of the Duck Dynasty. Just that camo is Christmas decorations. Like, I could not be more different in my political views, religious views, just like, well, we're just different.
What were you guys like when you were little, though? Did they play sports and you sang songs? I mean, I know you were always Joey and you were performing for the mops and the, you know, the spick and span and everything.
Well, you know, my mom had four kids and we were all competing for her attention. And my brothers played sports and they were good at it. My oldest brother was really great. In fact, I think he got a scholarship for volleyball.
Mm-hmm.
And I was good at sports, but I also sang. And that was my way of grabbing their attention. But my second oldest brother was a musical prodigy. Mm-hmm. He could pick up any instrument and master it. We all had our things, but I always knew when I looked at my brothers, y'all some dummies.
Something ain't right.
Y'all a few French fries short of a Happy Meal.
Something ain't right with those boys.
I wish them all the best.
Well, they were very different. Ted was charming and confident and did well in school. And Ronnie didn't. He was just a bit shy and awkward, didn't do well in school. But the one thing that Ronnie did always do was pretty much everything Ted told him. He sort of lived in his brother's shadow his whole life, wanted to be like him, idolized him, and would truly do anything for his brother.
And when Ted got to high school, he started working for Lyle's building supply company, and Lyle really took him under his wing, showed him how to run a business. So when Ted graduated high school, he started working full-time for Lyle with the goal of eventually taking over the business. And because Ted grew up with very little, he was obsessed with wealth.
Well, when you grow up poor and then you see how much fun money is, you're like, well, I want to do that.
Yeah.
I want to do whatever the other thing is other than being poor. And that was sort of Ted's driving force in his life as he grew up.
About 2 years later, in April 1993, after graduation, Ronnie joined the Marines, and that's when he started working in the chaplain's office.
Ronnie Jr. had plans to go into the ministry, just like his father did. He wanted to attend Liberty University in Lynchburg.
And this was around the time that Ted and Patricia met in the youth group. Oh, youth group. Did you ever go to youth group?
Nope.
I'll never forget our youth pastor taking all the boys into one room and his wife took all the girls into another room. I don't know to this day what she talked to them about. But he told us about the sin of masturbation. And you better believe I went right home and tried it.
Wait. How old were you?
Oh, like 14.
But how did they describe it? Honestly, because I never had that conversation.
Oh, are you joking?
No.
Someone had to, because he said masturbation, and a lot of us didn't know what that word meant because, you know, you're a kid and they're like, jerking off.
Right.
He had to kind of like sort of, and then we were like, oh, and then I went home and I tried it. And Pocahontas was number one soundtrack in our house for years.
God, nope, never went to youth group. Sounds fun. So Patricia wanted the American dream. She wanted the white picket fence. She wanted the kids. She wanted to work. She wanted just a regular old life. And she wanted just all the things that everyone wants. And so with that, they got married May 7th, 1994, shortly after they met. So now we're back to this awful tragedy and they're still trying to figure out who on earth would kill Patricia Kimball, because this is most certainly a murder.
And the police sit down with husband Ted, who is very helpful. He tells them he has no idea who would want to kill his wife, and he's willing to help them in any way he can. They, of course, ask for his alibi, and Ted says, I was working at Lyle's Building Supply. I clocked in the morning. I left at 6 p.m. to head to my second job at Precision Fabrics. That day, me and Patricia had lunch around noon, and when we were done, Patricia went back to her job. She worked as a manager of an apartment complex. And then Ted says Patricia got off work around 3:30 p.m., went home with the plan of heading to her Bible study at church later that evening.
Right. Ted was able to pretty much account for his entire day, minute to minute, hour by hour. He had everything the cops would need to essentially clear him as a suspect. So the friends confirmed she did not show up for Bible study. And Ted called her several times when the people from Bible study were basically like, hey, we haven't heard from Patricia. Where is she? She was supposed to bring the pineapple upside down cake. What's going on?
Ted finally called her brother to go check on her about 8 o'clock that night.
Her brother sees the house on fire, Patricia's car in the driveway, and calls 911.
We have to go back because I messed up earlier. I thought it was Ronnie Jr. who made that phone call. And I said that it was the brother-in-law that made that phone call. And it wasn't. I was wrong. And I can admit when I'm wrong. I was wrong.
Here on I Think Not, we love to take accountability.
And I'm taking it right now. Ladies and gentlemen, theys and thems, I am Joey Taranto. And I was wrong. For once.
Tell them what else you did.
I did not do anything other than read my Bible this morning and prayed for you because you'll be on my prayer list till the day I die, you heathen, sitting there in straps. You should be sitting in straps because you belong in prison for the atrocities you have committed against me.
What are those atrocities, baby?
Just looking at me and judging me for being a man, a beautiful man with a beautiful penis and having beautiful cats that are my children that I did birth. You judge all the time. And, That's pretty much a crime.
In taking accountability, you seem to have somehow turned it around to make me the villain. I'm used to that. Anyway.
I am a man.
So they went to go verify Ted Kimball's alibi at the building company. They confirmed his day panned out exactly how he said. They went to his second job exactly the same. Everybody verified he was indeed there. His alibi is airtight, as we say in the biz. So they absolutely have to rule him out as a suspect.
So investigators do some digging and they find out that in early 1995, Ted and Patricia's home had a break-in and we see pictures of it. It is literally ransacked. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just stuff everywhere. And now the question on investigators' mind is, could this be the same perpetrator? Because one of the investigators said this, like, a robber might go back to the scene of the crime later on because they know the layout of the house. They know the layout.
They might go back to rob them again.
Yeah, I've not really heard of that too much.
Yeah, me either. I would think it's just way too dicey, but that's what they were thinking. It seems a little odd.
We had made an arrest in that particular break-in. So we started looking at the suspect that had been arrested.
We investigate this potential suspect and we find out that he was in jail at the time of Patricia's murder. He couldn't have committed this murder, so we ruled him out.
Like we always say, prison is an airtight alibi.
Are they just handing out investigation badges? They're like, you get to be an investigator and you get to be an investigator. How does this work?
There's a lot of mansplaining on this episode.
Oh, yeah.
So now we hit October 11th, 1995. It's 2 days after the murder. And the police head to the apartment complex that Patricia managed to speak with her coworkers. It was called Cinnamon Ridge, your other Tinder username. So,
well, it's lovely. It's, it tastes like cinnamon.
Christmas. So all of Patricia's co-workers say, actually, it was a very normal day. She left to meet Ted for lunch at 11:30 a.m. She came back. She mentioned that she was going to go home early to mow the lawn before Bible study. And so she left at 3:30 p.m. Can I tell you something?
Mm-hmm.
I love cutting grass.
Really?
I'll put some music in my ears, cut my mama's lawn. I love it. It's very satisfying.
Oh, you can come do it. I don't have to pay my neighbor to do it for $20.
But I can't do it anymore.
How come?
I have a metal allergy and
oh, it's okay. Mine's plastic.
I also developed, funny you mentioned that, a plastic allergy.
Wow.
And
you should get away from that microphone screen then, baby.
Ooh, I don't feel so good.
Now, she can just leave work because she has to mow the lawn?
She's the manager. She can do what she wants.
I need a new job.
So now one coworker mentioned that Patricia had problems in the past with a particular tenant. She had to evict a woman, and this woman threatened Patricia's life. It was actually a very scary altercation.
Yeah, and everyone said Patricia remained calm, but it was really scary to her and to everyone in the office. And then they tell us this.
Anytime another person threatens another person's life, that's a potential murder.
I just want you all to know that we are an educational podcast here. We teach you things. In case you didn't know what potential murder looks like, it's when someone threatens murder.
You know, I got something to say.
Oh, God, what?
You know, I feel like I'm sick of your shit. I came here to say that. I know we're not in Florida, and I know how much you like to talk shit about Florida, but we are still in the South. Okay? And you know what? You're so judgy with your hoity-toity education. Yeah, you call yourself a San Francisco treat. You ain't nothing but a San Francisco twat.
All I was saying was people who listened and watched this show are perfectly capable knowing what a threat is, Bobby Lynn. I am doing my job. What do you do? How can you afford to always show up here? Don't you have a job?
You know I got a job. I am a cam girl now full time. I work Sunday to Sunday. I work 23 hours out of 24 hours a day, shaking these knockers for disgusting men.
Okay, well then how can you have so much time to come here and berate me for simply doing my job?
Because I'm on hour 24. I got a break. And I came here to mess with you, because you're judging all these people. You like to judge the Southerners, explaining that maybe some people don't know what the meaning of a threat is. But speaking of which, I got a threat for you.
Okay, this is recorded, just so you know.
I don't have a threat for you. But if I did, I would say something like, I hope you sleep well at night. Because I still am doing transcendentalization. That's right. What's transcendentalist.
What's transcendentalization?
It's when my mind travels. Wherever I go, I can go anywhere in a second. Right now, I'm in Tokyo.
Okay, can you go away now from this studio?
God, I'm sick of your shit. I ain't got to take this anymore, yo. Hoity toity. You have a blessed night, San Francisco twat. Take a Sprite and leave. And I hate your outfit. Bye.
You all, I'm sorry. I'm just trying to help you all. And I need better locks on my doors. Between Bobby Lynn and my cats, it's chaos.
Well, police go and investigate this former tenant. And she says, look, I am very sorry for how I acted. I recognize that I might have been a little confrontational. But I was not involved in this. I am very sorry. And she had a very solid alibi. So they were able to rule her out. But they were also like, you're kind of a cunt.
Yeah, also, like TLC sang, don't go threatening people's lives.
Is that how it went?
Or else you will be accused of murdering others. Nice. Listen, that was the workshop version.
It
yeah.
is.
But yeah, don't fucking throw around threats of killing someone. Listen, finances are stressful, but of course they would suspect that woman, but she was cleared.
We knew that on the day of the murder, Patricia Kimball arrived home around 3:30 p.m. to mow the yard.
Patricia parked in a location that would have been unusual for someone getting ready to mow the yard.
I thought that was a really astute conclusion.
Yeah. And then they're thinking, well, if she went inside, she must have recognized that car. She must have felt safe enough to go inside. So the question is, who was parked there? And did Patricia know her killer?
Right. So it's 1 week after the murder, and they had been asking everyone, interviewing friends, family, everybody she knew, inquiring about anything and everything about Patricia's life. And it came up that Patricia did have some problems. A little bit before she was murdered, she confided in her best friend, Laura Thompson, that Ted had become a little bit difficult to live with. He was irritable, easy to anger, and they were actually planning on going on a marriage retreat to kind of rekindle their love, kind of get back in sync with each other.
And Patricia's other friend and coworker, Christy, says, you know, in the beginning, everything seemed great between them. But as time went on, the cracks started to show. Things started to change. In fact, Patricia had become quite stressed. Because Ted liked to spend money. He wanted muscle cars and motorcycles and speedboats. Like, he basically was spending every dollar that came in as quick as it came in.
And they were a young couple. They were just married. And we talk about this on Shut the Fuck Up, Nick Lachey. You have to talk about how you're going to live your life, how you're going to spend your shared money. I mean, I personally believe in keeping your money separate, but that is for my marriage podcast coming out later in 2024. Because basically, Patricia was a saver and he was a spender. Remember, Patricia wanted the house and the kids and everything. And Ted was working two jobs, so you know that they weren't rolling in it yet, and he was just spending it as fast as it came in.
It's true. And then we get our first red flag of many.
While we were interviewing one of Patricia's friends, we found out that Ted Kimball got a life insurance policy on Patricia without her permission.
And when she found out, she told her friend Christy that she refused to sign it. And it was for $200,000. And Patricia even said to Christy, what's he planning on doing, knocking me off? And I'm sure she didn't mean that when she said it, but that shit is scary. So now police are thinking, that's a very strong motive. And we need to look into that insurance policy.
Right. And $200K by today's estimation would be about $410,000. And really, anybody into finances would tell you that if you're financially independent, if you're a couple, there is really not a lot of benefit to a big insurance policy because it would just be if something happened to your spouse, right?
Right.
So the number was weird, and she just
felt very weird about it. But guess what? You know what? He forged it anyway.
So then we have another red flag. The police find out that that policy had been taken out a month before the murder, and only 2 days after her death, Ted was trying to collect on that policy. What a fucking monster, and also, what a fucking idiot.
Yeah, you are grieving your wife. You don't know actually what happened, but you're gonna go collect those 200 G's? Yeah.
It ain't a good look. So the police are now thinking Ted is absolutely involved, but how do we prove this? Because he has a solid alibi. So did he have help?
You know what? Really easy. Ted was really forthcoming. He was really available. He was very cooperative. We'll just go back to Ted and ask him. I'm sure he'll fill in those blanks. He wants to know what happened to his wife.
No, he won't, because he says, I'm not talking, I'm pissed, and I'm not saying anything without an attorney. And that's literally the only smart thing that he has done.
What happened? Well, you were just Chatty Cathy a little while ago. You were telling us what you did from noon to one and one to two and two to three. What happened?
Yeah, before you were offering us coffee, cake, and mint juleps.
We start checking out Ted's family members.
Further investigation determined that Ted has a younger brother, Ronnie Kim, who's an active service member with the United States Marine Corps, stationed at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, which is about 4 hours away.
But he also had a home in Pleasant Garden, and his wife lived there. So they went to his home in Pleasant Garden. Ronnie wasn't there, unfortunately, but his wife was.
So they ask her, where was Ronnie Jr. the day of the murder? And she says, oh, he was in Pleasant Garden. He had met up with his brother Ted earlier in the day and came home around 5 p.m.? Also, Ted never mentioned Ronnie Jr. being in town, let alone meeting up with him when they interviewed him. The red flags are piling up.
Yeah, they might as well wave a Russia flag at this point.
Yep.
Because Ted went through every part of his day, down to what he had for breakfast and how he likes his crusts cut off of his sandwich, but you didn't mention that you saw your brother or that your brother was in town?
So now the police are becoming extremely suspicious of Ronnie Jr. And the question is this. If Ronnie Jr. did do this, why? Also, he has no criminal history.
And he's in the military, and he's led a very faithful life, and he went to Liberty University, which really instills morals and values in people. Why would anybody do that? So they look into the relationship of the Kimball brothers.
And they were very close. Very, very close. Kind of inseparable. And also, Ted could very easily manipulate Ronnie Jr. In fact, Ronnie Jr. would do anything for his big brother. And I mean anything. In fact, Ronnie couldn't say no to Ted. And that made police wonder, could Ronnie Jr. be the killer? So they got to speak with him.
So 11 days after the murder, they head down to Camp Lejeune. Now, remember, Ronnie and Ted were opposites, and that includes how they are interviewed. Ronnie was very nervous. They're like, we're going to make this real easy, Ronnie. Just walk us through your day, because we know you were at home in Pleasant Garden because your wife Trixie made us some beautiful and lovely canapés. So just walk us through your day.
So Ronnie says, well, I went to Ted's house at 7 a.m. to pick up his vehicle, because I was going to buy some building supplies and needed something to take them home with. And around 1 p.m., he goes to Ted's work at Lyle's Building Supply to help him out for a while. And he left at 3 p.m. to return Ted's vehicle to Ted's home. And then Ronnie went to his home. But Ronnie Jr.'s wife said that he didn't come home until 5 p.m. So that is a 2-hour window that can't be accounted for. And it's also around the time of Patricia's murder. So the police ask, what in the fuck were you doing for those 2 hours, Ronnie Jr.?
And Oxygen does this adorable thing, just in case you weren't paying attention and taking meticulous notes like I do. They say,
the murder occurred at 4 is right in the middle of that 2-hour window.
Thank you.
Yes.
Because we can't all be good at math and pay attention to everything.
Y'all got a whiteboard? I just want to write this out. I want to see it in my own 2 eyes.
So 3 and 5. What's the number in between?
That is...
Wait, I'll start over. Hold on. 3.
Uh-huh.
And then 5.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to use your fingers?
I'm missing 4 of them. Yes, I can deduce that it is 2 hours. And don't threaten people, because that could be considered a threat.
So if it's 3 and 5, the answer is yellow.
great. Thank you, Oxygen. So they were like, what were you doing? And so he just starts emptying his wallet. He's like, oh, I have a gas receipt. And they were like, okay, cool. Thanks for this gas receipt. This was before three, not what we were asking, but thank you. Save that for your taxes or something. And they were like, we want proof of what you did from three to five. And then Ronnie's like, all right, fair point. Fair point. You got me there. Yeah, I don't know. But what I do know is I had nothing to do with it.
Yes. And the police at this point are like, Ronnie, things ain't looking great for you.
Mm-hmm.
We are actually very suspicious of you. And of course, Ronnie Jr. denies it. And he says, again, I had nothing to do with this. And the police ask, great, are you willing to take a poly?
Yeah, I am. Yes, the answer is yes.
Great.
But I just want to, do you want to see those gas receipts again?
No, we're all good. We've seen them.
Okay, can I talk to my brother?
Why?
Because I want to ask my brother a question about
the Lord's Prayer. Yeah, we saw they got that wrong over there in the church bulletin board.
Yeah, I do, but I had a question about spackle.
Some spackle?
Some spackle questions. Nothing about what we're talking about here, but I will take that lie detector test if I could just ask him some spackle questions.
Yeah. This man was doing anything he could to dodge that poly and talk to Ted.
The key was to determine how long it took for Ronnie to drive from Lyle's Building Supplies, Ted and Patricia Kimball's house, and then to his own house.
The investigators actually went and drove the route that he would take.
Well, most likely it would take him 20 minutes to get to Ted's house and then 30 minutes to get to his home. So we are talking an hour that is unaccounted for, and Ronnie Jr. absolutely could have killed Patricia in that time.
Yeah, I don't want to take that lie detector test. I want you to talk to my attorney.
Okay. Really, Forrest Gump.
What is it again? Attorney.
My favorite part of Forrest Gump, which I haven't seen in a long time. I don't know if it's problematic. But when Sally Field fucks that guy, the principal, so that he can stay in school, and he goes, boy, your mama sure does love you. And he's like,
boy, your mama sure does care about your schooling.
Oh, there it is. I was close. Whoever are in heaven.
Everything now is pointing to the brothers. But at this point, it's all on hunches and circumstance. They have to prove that these men somehow committed the murder.
So that brings us to November 23rd, 1995, 2 months after the murder. Ted talks to the local news and offers a $25,000 reward for any information on the murder of his wife. And we see a clip of this dude, and he is absolutely behaving like a victim, and he is disgusting. He looks like the inside of a toilet bowl at Yankee Stadium in the men's room.
It was all fake. He was acting a fool. He knew that money wasn't going anywhere. $20,000. Make it $1 billion. I have a reward for $1 billion because that person is never collecting their money.
It's true. And most of the folks at his church supported him. They didn't want to believe he was capable of this. But there were people who were convinced in this town that the Kimball brothers were involved. Regardless, everyone in Pleasant Garden was putting pressure on the police to find Patricia's killer.
So there have been no arrests. They are so upset. They are so distraught. It's been 15 months.
A lot of tips are coming in through Crime Stoppers and other anonymous callers. We followed up every lead that we could.
It was frustrating that the case was taking so long to come to a closure. It seemed to drag on.
January 25th, 1997, we get this huge break in the case.
They get a call from Jerry Halliwell, Ginger Spice.
She's like, listen, babes, what I want you to know is I actually left Spice Girls of my own volition. Do you know that there's a rumor that I was having an affair with one of the girls? And it's absolutely true. And I left because they wouldn't go with my idea to do a song called Velickety Splits.
Also, my original name was Sexy Spice, and then they changed it to Ginger.
Is that true?
Yeah, she was originally Sexy Spice.
But Ginger's so much better.
Kidding, it wasn't Jerry Halliwell. It was Jerry Falwell.
Jerry Falwell himself! And he has some information for the police.
What's Jerry Falwell doing on your phone?
Truly.
He's on everyone else's. Why not mine? I can't believe you didn't get that reference. You get minus points for today.
You didn't give me a chance to say it.
You were moving on.
No, I took me a second. And why is...
J. Edgar Hoover.
God, I was gonna get it! And murder!
Murder?
What do you mean?
murder.
I was just trying to get you to open the door.
So Jerry Falwell calls to say, hi, yes, I am a homophobe. Yes, I am a racist. Yes, I am a misogynist. That's not why I'm calling. I'm calling because I have a student, the good Reverend Mitch Whidden, who has some information on this case. And y'all, the next day, the Pleasant Garden police drive all the way over to Liberty University to interview Mitch. Who knew that the biggest break in this case would come from fucking Jerry Falwell?
Unbelievable. The twist that nobody saw coming.
Following day, we went up there, sat down with Mitch Whidden to find out what he knew.
Mitch told us on January 23rd, 1997, Ronnie Kimball Jr. visited him.
They were in the Marines together at Camp Lejeune, and during that visit, Ronnie Jr. broke down and said, can I tell you something? Whenever anyone says, can I tell you something, just say yes.
Oh, of course. I can't talk about it. Of course you can.
And so Mitch was like, yeah, of course. And Ronnie poured his heart out, was hysterical crying, and basically told him exactly what happened the day that Patricia lost her life, pretty much moment by moment.
So Ronnie tells Mitch that he left Lyle's building supply at 3 p.m. He drove to Ted and Patricia's house, parked in the driveway, went around the back door, broke in, and hid in the bathroom to wait for Patricia. She gets home at 4 p.m. She's walking down the hallway to her bedroom, and as she walks by the bathroom, Ronnie Jr. emerged from the bathroom and shot her in the back of the head. She falls to the floor, and Ronnie ransacks the house to stage a break-in. Then this monster doused Patricia in gasoline and sets the fire. Ronnie Jr. also told his friend Mitch that Ted was the one who asked him to do this because he wanted the insurance money.
And he said, I would do anything for my brother, which that's going a little bit too far. But Mitch was a reverend, and Ronnie was essentially asking him for forgiveness. But by this point, Mitch is terrified.
Terrified.
He is shaken, and he asks him to leave. And he goes straight to Jerry Falwell because Mitch is like, I don't know what this man is capable of now that he's told me. Is he going to hurt me? Is he going to hurt my family? Rightfully so. All legitimate fears. And so Mitch agrees that he will testify in court.
And so now warrants are issued for Ted and Ronnie's arrest. And both of them are arrested. Ted at his home and Ronnie Jr. in Camp Lejeune. And the next day he was discharged, dishonorably discharged from the military.
Right. And they were sent to two different jails because they wanted to limit their ability to communicate with each other. Very smart.
What we were trying to do was to see if we could get one to crack on the other.
Our goal is to get a confession from either brother, but ultimately they did not talk to us. And both of them are lawyered up.
And these bottom of your recycling bin trash buckets pled not guilty. This was a death penalty case in 1995. I had to look this up. North Carolina has not carried out any executions since 2006. They are still very much a death penalty state. And this was murder in the first, and they had the death penalty on the table.
Yeah. So the full charges here, Ronnie Jr. was charged with first degree arson, conspiracy to commit murder, and first degree murder. Ted was charged with conspiracy to commit arson, conspiracy to commit murder, and first degree murder. And like you said, both of them entered a non-guilty plea and decided to go to trial. Fucking idiot.
August 10th, 1998, Ronnie Kimball Jr.'s trial began. Trial lasted for 22 days. That's a bit long. But they called 58 witnesses, but their star witness was, of course, Mitch Whidden. Listen to this defense that they tried to pull off.
Your Honor, if it pleases the court, I would like to address the jury. Gentle jury people, I know this is a very compelling case with a lot of evidence, including a confession. However, I would like to say that actually wasn't a confession from my client. It was a dream that he had that he was telling Mitch about and not a confession. So we rest our case. And we're not guilty.
Y'all, we are not joking. That is actually how Ronnie Jr.'s lawyer tried to defend him to the jury. It did not work.
How on earth would that work? I just imagine them sitting in a meeting and being like, listen, Ronnie, this is looking real, real bad. I can't even think of an excuse. Like, I mean, would you dream it? Oh, yeah. No, I dreamed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you go with that?
Yeah.
Can you go with what do you mean dreamed it?
I dreamt it.
I dreamt it.
No, I was just throwing
no,
that.
No, I dreamt it. I did not do this. I did not confess. I was telling him about a dream.
No, when I was just saying that, I was saying that as a joke. Like
I'm not joking. I dreamt it.
So you want me to go tell that?
I want you to tell him I dreamt it.
Yeah, it didn't work.
It did not work. 2 days later.
The jury was like,
what you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
That's what they said.
Yeah.
So September 2nd, 1998, he received a guilty verdict and sentenced to life without parole.
On January 28th, 1999, Ted Kimball agrees to a plea deal to avoid the death penalty.
Under the plea deal, Ted Kimball receives 107 years in prison, and I'm glad that justice was served.
Now, in the town of Pleasant Garden, there is a conspiracy that people believe Ted had been planning this since the day he married Patricia, and there's no evidence to support that. It's just so sad because Patricia loved him. She wanted a family with this man, and he murdered her. And the way in which they did this is horrifying.
It breaks my heart to think of what they did to her. A beautiful life stolen. It was very painful losing her, and I've missed Patricia a lot over the years.
So that's sort of where the episode ends, and it just ends with everyone just having their sad moment and feeling so awful for this senseless tragedy that involved just a very innocent woman just trying to live her life. But we do have a little bit of side research. You want to start, Joey?
Yes. Patricia had actually written in her journal that she feared for her safety because Ted had been sleeping with a gun under mm-hmm. his pillow. She actually told her friends that if anything happened to her, it was Ted.
Yep.
Also, before they got married, Ted had been dating both Patricia and her cousin Janet, and apparently a third woman. He proposed to both Janet and that third woman in a short period of time. Both turned him down. That's when he turned to Patricia.
It's like love is blind.
I mean, fucking sick. Also, Ted began dating a few weeks after Patricia's murder. He also used the money that the church had donated to him to buy a motorcade. Also, Ted attempted to escape prison, by the way.
And yes, he did. Very unsuccessfully.
Very unsuccessfully. And was accused of trying to hire an inmate to have witnesses killed. He was also convicted of stealing building supplies from his work. This guy was a real piece of shit.
Real piece of shit. I probably would have dated him. But yeah, they are both still behind bars and will remain there. I mean, Ted got 107 years in prison, which is, I guess you don't get the title of life sentence, but that's the rest of your life. So, rotten hell, you motherfuckers. And I am so sorry for that woman. And she knew.
She knew.
That's what absolutely breaks my heart, because they did reference her journal and things she had written in the trials. And that's just so sad. Say something funny.
Well, remember how I told you that I taught Sunday school?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There were some other strange things that I did in church, and one that I have never actually shared with you or anyone.
Okay, please be careful. I don't want a bad rating on iTunes.
Okay. I used to do mime for Jesus, and I have a picture of me in full mime regalia.
Okay, well, I need this picture.
It will never see the light of day.
We'll see about that. Oh, man, that was a hard one.
Yeah.
Killer Siblings, y'all. It's actually a very interesting show. We didn't talk about the intro to the show. There is an intro. We see all these pictures of these brothers and sisters and sisters and brothers. And one brother and sister definitely looks like it's the brother with a wig on his head.
Absolutely.
But we'll get to it. Let us know how you're liking it. Thank you so much, Down Bitches. Don't forget to come see us on tour. We cannot wait to see you. We are so excited. Right after this recording, we're going to do a run through because we are getting ready for you. Check us out on I Think Not Pod, or you can follow us on any of our social media platforms, I Think Not Pod on Instagram and TikTok, and also join our Facebook group.
It's called the I Think Not Podcast Facebook Discussion Group, and you can get a lot of news there about our comings and goings, and you can interact with this amazing community. It's very fun.
It is very fun. We also post all of our announcements and all of the fun stuff. And don't forget our Patreon. There are so many bonuses coming at you. We have just restructured our Patreon to include merch drops. We're also doing a quarterly painting party. We also do watch parties where we watch a movie and chat. It's so fun, and it is just another way that we get to spend time with our community that has given us so much. It is our favorite thing. Please join in on the fun if you are able to. Don't forget, we will always be here in your general feed, and we love you so much.
We sure do, and I love you, Yula Marsh.
I love you, Joey.
Love you, DBs.
Love you, DBs.
Bye.
Bye.
My Jesus.
We got a new show for you. We picked it just for you.
Cut that.
It's a joke.
I'm sorry.
Do you have that picture?
Oh my God, I will never let you see it.
Why?
Because. Oh,